Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble and keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice
hospitality.
Bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. Be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with each other. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of ordinary people. And don't think you know it all. Never pay back with evil. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scripture says, I will take revenge. I will pay them back, says the Lord. Instead, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals of shame on their heads. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. Romans 12, 9 through 21.
You have to kiss me?
Okay. That's too heavy. I don't want that one.
This one.
It's not as heavy.
Do the slides.
All right, good morning. Welcome to church. It is somehow almost March.
Yeah.
If you can believe it. And we are going to talk about overcoming evil with good. Woo! This passage shows us that we must interact with one another, and with God in a certain way in order to overcome evil with good rather than being overcome by it. So for some background on my next slide, we're going to... That was smooth. That was pretty slick. If I hadn't addressed it, it would have been a great transition. Learning for next time. So, the book of Romans, this book in the Bible, is a letter. I don't know if you know this. It's a letter specifically to the Christians in Rome, the Roman Christians. The nice thing about the epistles is that they are written to churches, so a lot of the application of them in our lives is pretty direct. Romans more so, because a lot of its contents are super general. In some of Paul's epistles, he'll be like, hey, can you bring my cloak and my quills and my scrolls and say hi to my girl Priscilla for me? I miss her. Not that insinuating that he was romantically involved with her, that's not what I was saying. Just he wanted to say hi to some people. And that doesn't apply to us because centuries have passed. Duh. So, this section specifically is telling us about how we might go about renewing our minds. I broke it up to three sections, because that's how my brain works, and you gotta break it up into sections. And this is essentially specific ways that we can renew and transform ourselves. As Aaron has talked about previously, that's kind of what's been leading into this, right? So, it also reads a lot like the Beatitudes, or the Sermon on the Mount. The Bible Project, this is such an aside, but the Bible Project is reading through the Sermon on the Mount, in a year, and they're like looking at it in depth. I so highly recommend you take a look at it. There are videos you can watch, or you could listen to it, or you could read stuff. It's very cool. But obviously, I have Sermon on the Mount on my brain, so I was like, do other people think this reads like the Sermon on the Mount? Yes. It was not just a me thing. There are clear parallels between Romans 12 specifically and that passage, the Beatitudes. So it's very clear that Peter knew Jesus' teachings quite well. Which reminds me, David taught me something when I started my first satellite program solo. It's this after-school program with middle schoolers, and it is kind of daunting. I had a person that was helping me, and then I was doing it by myself, and there was a lot of, oh my gosh, I work with kindergartners, how am I going to talk to these middle schoolers like they're in middle school? and not say, 1, 2, 3, eyes on me. 1, 2, eyes on you. You guys didn't even do that. Okay, well, we'll work on it. But, so I was so worried about talking down to them. I totally just took this from David, and I was like, this is mine now. And it's this thing where you say there's one rule for the club, and the rule for the club is don't be a jerk, right? That's a lot of rules, actually, but don't tell them. It's just one rule, don't be a jerk. And so you say don't be a jerk, and then when there are specific instances of what I like to call jerk behavior, I will lead the club off by saying, for example, don't be a jerk. What's an example of something you could do that is jerk-like? And they'll say, oh, eating snacks right over the controllers. And I'm like, yeah, that's a jerk thing, because I told you 2 weeks ago it's a jerk thing, and you keep doing it. And then the other thing is leaving trash on the floor, jerk behavior, because I literally wheel a trash can from the school all the way to the area where our club is every Monday when our club takes place, and if they're still just putting it right on the floor, jerk behavior. So, this passage is full of jerk moves, and non, and I made a list. So, I wanted to kind of simplify the evils, mainly because I don't really know what haughtiness means, like I had to look it up. And so I was like, I need to simplify the language, maybe you would benefit from simplifying the language for the evil side of it. So, we're looking at laziness, hard times, unfair treatment, pride, payback, and bad guys. And then, for the goods, they're very similar to the fruits of the spirit. They're not, but they probably could be summed up in them, basically. So, these goods are love, honor, goodness, hard work, service, harmony, patience, all these beautiful things. What I noticed when I was diving into the text is that the goods are controllable. The goods are things that we can do. I cannot. Laziness, that might be on me. Laziness is on me. That's my bad. But hard times, I didn't make groceries cost as much as they do right now. I didn't do that. Oh, that's on someone else. You know, that's outside of my circle of influence. But the goods, these are things that we can do. What I like about this passage is it's saying, all right, be transformed by the renewal of your mind. All right, how do I do that? And then Paul, awesome dude, is just like, here's how you do it. Here are the things that you can do. Action steps. You see laziness, you overcome it with this. You see this, you overcome it with this. So, I really like that it's in our hands. Because I don't know if you... about you. I really like control. Yeah. I really like having control of the vehicle I'm in, or my schedule at work, or anything. And only I can love as myself. I can't make Reagan love me. I can't make Reagan be honorable. Come on, Reagan. But I know you can take it, so I'm just kidding. But only you can love as yourself. Only you can submit your own life to Christ. Only you can prevent wildfires. But the evils, they are outside of your control. That is the nature of the world, current and past and future. There will be evils of all shapes and size, but in time, we can fight with good to conquer it. As a visual aid, this is a movie called Ghostbusters, and that is a creature named Slimer. He is the evil in this situation, and the good overcomes him. I don't know that you're getting it, so we need to do another example from my favorite Disney movie, which is Monsters, Inc., and Randall's evil. Randall's the worst. Randall is the evil, obviously. Just a one-for-one, he is evil incarnate. And then the goods are the bat that Boo is holding, and she is conquering it, right? And the last one is a bit of a stretch, but stay with me. This is a manatee, and I know what you think. Oh, he's getting excess water off of those propellers. I choose to believe he is inspecting the propellers in order to overtake them and get them out of the water so no manatee ever has to get hurt by them ever again. So he is the good, overcoming the evil. That's what I choose to believe. Based on nothing, but that I like manatees and I don't want them to get hurt by it. So, the good things are what we can control, and oftentimes those good things are done with others. I know that's a bummer to some of you. I don't know about you, but sometimes I've had a day at work where I'm like, wow, if I could just do this task and no people were here and I didn't have to rely on anybody, I could just do it and they weren't here. Is this just me? Oh, shoot. You know, I find this to be relatable, but now it's got me really questioning things. But I'll be at work. I work with children. I'm like, if only the adults weren't here to get in my way, and then I could train the children in a beautiful way that they would go. And it would be perfect, and no one would do anything that I don't like them to do, and I'd run the world. But thank goodness I don't. Thank God I don't. So, we are going to talk about how these things are done with others. We don't live in a vacuum. We interact with others, and that is how we show this love. That is how we are renewed and transformed. So, to summarize these verses, I would say, Paul wants us to offer genuine and eager community to all. And if we go to the next slide, I got some verses up there. The first section is just, don't pretend to love others, really love them. I feel like maybe not that hard. But then I think about it a little longer, and you have places, I don't know if you've been to school, but in school, you have to hang out with the same people forever all the time. And that's great when they're your buddies, but it's less great when you are at odds with them in some manner. There's some sort of drama, right? And then being sincere is really tricky, because what if I don't sincerely love them? And how do I do that without getting written up in middle school or whatever? That was maybe a little bit too specific. But the other thing is to hate what is wrong. Super great if you know what's wrong. Super difficult if no one ever told you what was wrong, or you've been thinking this thing is wrong your whole life and it's fine. Or you've been thinking this thing is okay the whole time and it's been wrong. I think those gray areas are very tricky. So it wants you to be real, to love good and hate the bad. And on paper, I found that very simple. Love good things, hate bad things. But there's a lot of gray in life. I really like black and white. That's my zone. This, evil, hell, demons, darkness, black, you know? In the dark side, in the evil side. And then angels, unicorns, cupcakes with sprinkles, and cookies on the light side, right? But life isn't like that. You know, there are dilemmas. And we oftentimes, I'll speak for myself, I have oftentimes felt like, especially Little Mo thought there was like one right choice in every situation. Like, am I going to wear a skirt today or pants? Am I going to wear heels or boots? All of those had a right answer, even the non-morally important ones. And then I had to make the right choice in order to be like God's people. Like, if I was a good Christian, I would know what day to wear boots, what day to wear a coat, what things to say to what people. And those things do feel like that when they're bigger choices. What job do I take? What thing do I do? What is right? What is wrong in this situation laid uniquely in front of me? But I was giving myself way too much credit, because God is so much bigger than my choices. Thank God. He is so much bigger than the things that I choose to do. And for this next slide, I really like how open-ended help is. Like, when I first read through this, I was like, okay, give money to the people in need. Been there, heard that, whatever. Not that I don't think you should do that, but I was like, oh, I get it. And then I read it over and over again, and I was like, oh, no. When people are in need, be ready to help them. That doesn't say financially. Maybe you gotta move them to a new house. Maybe you gotta give them shelter, food, clothing, ride to the airport. Who knows? But be ready. Whatever it is, we don't know, but be ready. living in harmony with people is definitely easier said than done, as I mentioned before, which If you guys don't relate to the having struggles with people at your work thing, maybe you are crushing it at living in harmony with other people, and I don't have to do this part of the message, because you're better than me. Holier than me, for sure.
Keep going.
Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. But leaving people out is another way we are disharmonious with others, and it can sneak up on you. You find your people, you're comfortable, you sit in the same seats, at the same place, and all of a sudden, you've left someone over there. You've left someone outside of your community, and you think you're better than to stoop so low as to include them. I think we really need to be critical of that, because that is how beautiful spaces can be turned into very isolating spaces, despite being surrounded by a bunch of people. And this, don't think you know it all. Oh, go back, sorry. And don't think you know it all. The ESV says, never be wise in your own sight. Mwah. I love that. Because I'm wise in my own sight all the time. I'm constantly wise in my own sight. But that's why in biblical times, leaders had a group of wise counsel, right? You can be wise to yourself, but this is saying, that's not good enough. You can think you're smart, but you really need to go outside of yourself and get some perspective. My family, my in-laws, are very argumentative, and I didn't really understand why. And they're just argumentative. They like to disagree about, it's like fun. They'll like disagree about silly stuff that doesn't matter. It's not about like important, they're chill. But I never understood that perspective. I was like, even fighting about silly, non-harmful things is like really stressful for me. I'm like, I don't want to argue with anyone. I'll just say you're right, and please allow me to lay on the floor and for you to walk right over me as a doormat. So that perspective, I was wise in my own sight. Oh, I'm not going to make anybody mad. I'm not going to do that. But it's really shown me, like, conflict is not abuse, right? Conflict is just confrontation of issues. And I would never have known that if I had stuck with, I'm wise because I think I'm wise because I've never heard anything from anyone else to tell me the other side of it. And this middle, that is tricky. Be happy with those who are happy. Nailed that. I nail that every time. If you want someone to celebrate you, call me up. I'm on it. But if I had to choose between rejoicing with the rejoicers and weeping with the weepers, I'd be on the rejoice side every time. Every time. I think we often see those in a state of weeping, being sad, mourning, being full of grief or depression, and we feel like we need to fill that space. We can't just weep with them. We gotta say something. They're upset. We need to comfort them. But I have felt more at times, I have been more comforted by silences, open palmed hands to my shoulder, and nods from across a room than any words could have ever expressed. Because I felt that people were with me, experiencing what I was experiencing, and not making me feel like I had to get to a different state. The weeping is temporary, but I gotta weep when I gotta weep. That's just how it goes. So, these directions, next slide please, thank you so much. All these instructions about how we're to renew ourselves that Paul has given us, they show us who God is. And I love that so much, because the message of the text today is do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Outside of that, but along with it, next to that, I would say, I just see such a beautiful characterization of Christ in this passage. Because you know who wept with the weepers, mourned with those who mourn? Jesus. You know who lived in harmony with others as much as it was in his hands? Jesus. And that, to me, shows not a leader calling down on you, saying, do this, do that, because I said so and I'm in charge and you respect me. That is a leader that is coming alongside you, and he's asked you to do something, and he's doing it with you. He's taking that load on with you, alongside you, and that shows you who he is. It's one of the many ways we get to see who God is. And I found that very beautiful. This next section is about our interactions with God. So with God, there were two verses that didn't really apply to interacting with others. They're kind of just general teachings. And it's verse 11, which says, don't be slothful in zeal, which means lazy. They could have just said slothful, because in zeal means be lazy in your passions, which just means be lazy. But who am I to critique the Bible in its language? Not good enough. Yeah, no, that's not my role, for sure. But it says, be fervent in the Spirit and serve the Lord. I wish this was more of a how-to, because that's great. Don't be lazy. I wasn't trying to be lazy, and then all of a sudden, I'm curled up in a sunspot in a chair in my house, and I don't want to do anything. So I wish Paul was like, and you don't do it by implementing this routine or this practice or eating this much a day or whatever. I would like very specific things to do, but then I wouldn't need faith. If it told me exactly what to do and when to do it, I would not need to rely on God. And I would just do it by myself. And that's not the life that we live. It says, be fervent in spirit and to serve the Lord. The next thing is to rejoice in hope, which sounds very nice, but it's not. And I'll tell you why it's not in a second, but it's not. It's not nice. Be patient in tribulation and be constant in prayer. Rejoice in hope sounds very nice. Rejoice, good word, has joy in it. We like joy. Hope, we love hope. We hope for things. We love when teams hope for greatness and compete to meet their dreams of going to the Olympics or going to the Super Bowl. We love hope, but hope is later. And if I am in the foggiest, densest, most uncomfortable present, to rejoice in a hope I do not yet have takes a great amount of self-control. It takes a great amount of will to rejoice in that future hope. And I think this expands on itself to say be patient in tribulation. Right? Whatever you're going to face now, there's this beautiful light at the end of the tunnel. Salvation. Going to heaven. Just jamming up there. I don't know what you envision in heaven, but I definitely envision seeing my dad. Definitely envision being on a boat that no one has to drive. I envision a lot of those things. But it's hard in the moment to think of all those hopes that we will have. Dan mentioned something regarding the song that I sang this morning. The last time I heard that song was at my father's memorial service. And I hated it very much. One, there was a photographer there taking pictures of me. Why are you taking me pictures of me today? That day? Are you for real? But whatever. I'm sitting in the front row in front of a bunch of people wearing flannels because that's where my dad lived his life. We'd all be smoking stogies if there weren't kids there and stuff. So. But when that song came on and it said, I've never been more glad, I said, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be joking me. I wanted to stand up and leave the service right there. I've never been more glad that I put my faith in Jesus. Couldn't be me. February 2023? No. Mm-mm. But I asked Dan if they could play that song and if I could be a part of it, because the other day it came on the radio and I believed it. And there were things that took place in between those two bookends. Nearly a year, February 2023, February 2024, there were things that took place, and it was murky and it was really hard. And it was difficult. But I had a hope that I could rejoice in, and that hope made all of that easier. I could be more patient because I knew what was coming. I know that I will see my dad again. I know that I will go to heaven. I know that I get to ask Jesus all my questions, but because it's heaven, I probably won't have any questions or care because I don't have concerns for the world because it's heaven. but prayer and patience makes all of this more attainable, even when the hope is hard to see. Lastly, we get to talk about enemies. I know you saw that heaping lumps of coal in their head thing. You're like, ooh, finally. They get what they deserve. Sadly, no. It is actually not that. Not that at all. There's no snake in their bed. We don't get to put an air in their shampoo. We don't get to put their hand in warm water. Nope. None of it. But we do get to put hot coals on their head. But it's not in a way that makes them less of who they are. It's in a way that turns them to look at us, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The first passage of this on our next slide is, bless those who persecute you, don't curse them, and pray that God will bless them. Dude, what? I'm so sick of this guy. Paul, what? I just want you to say an easy thing, like, do 5 of this, do 10 of this, every morning, every night, blah, 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 and then it's easy. But it's not easy. It takes patience. People are really hard to live at peace with. And I like that he gives us tools like prayer and things that we can, that can help us work against this nature we have in this world that everyone would root for you if you took on your enemies. Everyone would root for you if you said, oh, curse you guys, you suck. I hope bad stuff happens to you. I hope you eat worms. And then everyone would get that. Everyone in the world would be like, yeah, you do that because they're your enemy and that sucks. But this passage is asking us to renew our minds and strive for something higher. And then never pay back evil with evil. Never take revenge. Never. Not even one time when you think they really, really deserve it? Not even once? Come on, man. The passage shows us a different way to get back at our enemy. It gets rid of them. Not in a way that evokes pain, but in a way that makes them question why they ever opposed you. If you're in the face of somebody that's constantly praying for you to succeed and do well and to be blessed, and when you're rude to them, they're kind to you. Enough that you feel safe around them. You can open up to them. That's not an enemy anymore, man. That's a buddy. You got a friend. You got a friend. Got a friend in me. So, Jesus, again, peak example of this. Because Pilate didn't even know that dude. Pilate didn't even know Jesus. He'd be like, oh, I guess. Let me see. Oh, he, like, hasn't done anything wrong and is doing a bunch of really cool stuff and saving a bunch of people's lives? Wait, he's on the bad guy list? You guys want to kill that guy? That's not even... okay. And eventually he just gets tired of it all and lets it happen. But Jesus made people question, why do we even hate this guy? If he's doing all these lovely things, why are we at odds with him? So in reading this passage, I came to a conclusion that there are ways we have to interact with one another and with God to overcome evil. And to do that with good, rather than being overcome by the evil itself. And for me, it also highlighted some areas where I could stand to have my mind further renewed. Because that is the Christian journey. That is a Christian life. I don't get baptized. For me, it was when I was a junior. I don't know when you got baptized. Tell me after the message. But I got baptized as a junior, and then, boom, no problems ever again. Mind renewed. 17-year-old Mo. We're all glad you guys didn't know me when I was 17, let's just say that. But it started a process of being transformed, renewing my mind, but it is work. It is work, but it is worthwhile. And it will help you amidst tribulation. It might even cause some tribulation. What? Working on yourself is going to make you stand out. For Jesus kept telling people, shh, don't tell them. You don't have to tell them that I did that. It's fine. It's cool. But it couldn't stay hidden. His kindness, his nature, his mind was renewed implies that it wasn't. It was old, and then they renewed it. His mind is just new. He's God. Sorry. Talking about God gets really confusing. But his mind is the ultimate thing that we can strive for, to be like Christ. And when we strive toward that, he's still there. We don't have to go through it by ourselves. We're not in a vacuum. People make it harder, but people also make it easier. So I want you to ask yourself, what is an area of my life that I could stand to have renewed? And if you need some specifics, ask your partner. Just kidding. But look at this passage, genuinely. This passage will tell you and guide you in, here are some specific areas. Does that pull on your heartstrings? Does that rouse anything in your mind? And yeah, I can't do that part for you, though. Neither can Paul. You guys have to do that for yourself. So, thank you.
Have a couple of questions for you. I need to get my phone because I gotta look this thing up. I looked it up and I got it. And it's important that you understand the definition of thinking of yourself more highly than you should, thinking of yourself smarter than others. It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Anybody familiar with that? The Dunning-Kruger effect? Anybody ever heard of that?
Heard it once.
The Dunning-Kruger effect. I'm gonna read it to you because it's fascinating. The Dunning-Kruger effect.
And,
so I just want you to know this. The Dunning-Kruger effect is, in psychology, is a cognitive bias whereby people with limited knowledge or competence in a given intellectual or social domain greatly overestimate their own knowledge or competence in that domain relative to objective criteria or to the performance of their peers or people in general. You get that? Mm-hmm. It's thinking you're smarter than you are. That occurs. I was just trying to sound smarter than I am by reading that. The whole idea is thinking that you're wiser in your own eyes than you actually are in objective criteria. Is there a time in your life when you ever been guilty of that and been caught in that? Thinking that you were wise in your own eyes. Yes, Sammy. Oh, we need a couple of people to run. Yeah, go get one. I'll bring it up here. Who else? Who's going to run? We can just go with... Sorry, Sammy. It's not Sammy. I'm sorry, Reagan. Here. Show you how it works.
Is this just a one question for you?
This is just this one question for now.
Until you ask another one.
Until I come up with the other one. Until I get the other one.
So in high school, I was the only kid at the youth group. Shout out to small churches. So I always got one-on-one attention with my youth pastor. So I always thought I was really smart. I thought I was really awesome. I knew a lot about God. Let's go, 18-year-old Sammy. Then I got to college, and I started talking about things, like topics, you know, as you do, about God and stuff. And then they said big words.
Eschatology?
Whatever you said, yeah, I don't know. They said words to me every day, like epistemology. I was like, that's sounds like a bad word. What are you talking about? We're talking about God. Yeah, it just freaked me out. So then I shut up, and I started asking questions, and it worked better.
Anybody else been guilty of the Dunning-Kruger effect? Sam.
That's Reagan.
I know, but that's Sandy. But she's handing a mic.
Oh, yeah. I'm not good with the mic. Or I said I can't sing when I get a mic in front of me, but I can sing when I don't. But anyhow, side note. I've worked at my job 31 years, and I used to have new people come in, and same establishment. And I thought, God, they got a lot to learn. And then I'm like, they changed the programs in my computer about every other, 2 months. And then there's something I don't remember of the 10,000 emails we get a month that I was supposed to read down in the second, third, fourth paragraph of one of the 10,000 emails. And some of them had really impeccable memories. And I thought, oh man, I got to teach them all this. And I thought in my mind. And then I'm like, I finally sat back one day and I said, you know what? They're helping me get into the programs when they get changed. These people are helping me remember all these policies that is going on. It gave me a wake-up call, and I'm like, there's a lot of value in teamwork, even new teams, even young people, even millennials.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned the Dunning-Kruger effect. There's a part on that graph where there's like this crater of confidence where you realize, like, you now know enough to know how little you know about the topic.
Exactly.
A big part of my job doing video game ministry is getting to be there for that moment for a lot of students when they have that crater of confidence because they realize, like, oh, there's way more to know, and helping people deal with that, because that's a tough moment. And then to also get to tell them that, like, hey, also, I'm also not very good at video games comparatively.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I'm usually pretty good at technical stuff. I've been to computer school. I learned a lot of stuff that is now irrelevant because technology changes. But I've always prided myself in being very up on technology and you know, how to work things and how to make computers work and make anything practical work. And then so a few years ago, I decided I wanted a MacBook. Well, I don't really know anything about MacBooks, but I thought, how hard could it be? I know how to use a Windows machine, so I bought a MacBook and I brought it home and I turned it on and I'm like, I don't really know how to even do a simple anything at all. And I was sitting there with my daughter, Dana, who also never had a MacBook, but for some reason, I think she was 16 at the time, or maybe 17 or 18. But she's like, give me that, Dad. There you go. Set up your email or Facebook page, all your web browsers and everything's all set up. She did it in like 15, 20 minutes. And I'm like, how did you do that? Did they teach you that in school? She goes, it's just easy, Dad. Like, okay.
So like a year ago or so, I got really into boxing, and I watched like a lot of videos, and I was like shadow boxing a lot, and then some of my friends like sparred in the woods. Like, we had like this weekly thing, like on Saturdays we would like spar in the woods. That only lasted
a
couple
of weeks.
Aren't
you not supposed to talk
about
that?
So, funny thing about that, our one rule of our fight club was to not make that joke because it's not funny after like the first. Like, somebody makes the joke and then, like, you know, it's not funny anymore. But anyway, so like what my brother was talking about of like you discover how little you know about something. Like, I got hit in the head a few times and then like I realized, like, wow, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was.
And that was all in a video game.
In Minecraft, yeah.
Yeah.
In Minecraft.
Okay, I'm going to go to the second question unless there's somebody else. Okay. Well, let me give you a quote here on that Dunning-Kruger effect. It's because it's fascinating. Charles Darwin said this: ignorance more frequently begets confidence than does knowledge. Ever find that to be true? Mm-hmm. Ignorance more frequently begets confidence than does knowledge. Second question is, have burning coals ever been heaped on your head?
One more time?
Have burning coals ever been heaped on your head? Not literally, but figuratively. You ever been convicted of something and felt shame because somebody doing something nice for you? That's a thinker. That's a head scratcher right there. You ever been doing something that wasn't so good and then somebody kind of reminded you, been convicted of that? That's a great question. Yes, Aaron, right up here.
I don't have a specific example, I just have a specific person. I am by nature a butthead, and if you confront me on something, I will double down and confront you back. I like to counterpunch, and I like to win, and I like to be right, and I hate losing. And all that to say is that my wife defeats me in a way I need to be defeated by not interacting with my buttheadedness, but by loving me. She honors me in situations where I'm being a butthead, and it diffuses me, and it changes me in the situation from being confrontational to non-confrontational. She does it all of the time, and she's really good at it, because oftentimes she could be right and she could fight me on it, but she wins by conceding and bringing me to a place where I realized, dude, I'm a butthead, and I need to be more loving. So, like I said, I don't have a specific example, it just happens in my life all the time, and she's really good at it.
Keep your ground.
That's good. I think that's the idea. Anybody else want to try that? Nobody wants to admit their shame. Oh, Debbie's got it.
So, I grew up in a household where you won an argument, period. So you just always had to be right. And we would verbally spar with each other. And so it instilled in me this value of always being right. At the end, winning the fight, whatever. And so it's taken a lot of years for me to try and deal with that in my life. And so my best buddy and Mel teamed up on me to remind me that I wasn't always right and that I needed to do some things to, I don't know, be a little better person, which was a total act of love. And to this day, we write on the calendar when they're right. And I'm not.
Oh, that's right, 3 times.
Well, that's good.
It's a way of reminding me that I'm tangling with people when I shouldn't be. That's my thing.
Very nice. All right. If there's nobody else to answer that. Oh, there is one all the way back here. Is it Jamie? Is that who it is?
So, we might all be, I'm in a healing journey and learning a lot of things in my path to recovery, that the root of my addictive behavior has always been self-harm. And from a young age, I've really battled with suicidal ideation. And just a couple weeks ago, somebody shared with me about the root name of God, that when he responded to Moses with I am, that was the meaning of Yahweh was inhale and exhale, that he's on every breath that we take. And after I learned this, I wept with tears of joy because I looked over the history of my life when I'd get so desperate to just ask God to end it. And I felt those coals of shame that the very being that put me here for a purpose I have yet to understand, kept me breathing, despite my own shame and my frustrations and my agony with the world as it is. And his mercy just heaps of coal on my head. And I'm so grateful that he knows better than I, and he doesn't answer all our prayers.
Amen.
Yeah, it is an act of mercy that God allows that to happen in our lives. Like Aaron was talking about, it's not God heaping coals on our head, it's just like that. It's that concept that we feel kind of a burning of like needing to change our ways, need to change our way of thinking. So that's really good. And that's God's way of overcoming evil with good. And our job is, of course, as Mo pointed out, is not to shame other people, but to love them and let God do that, bringing those complex emotions, he's the only one who can, to make people turn around in their ways. Well, let's close with a word of prayer. Stephen, you go ahead.
Dude, I promise.
I'm going to let you go ahead. It better be worth my time.
Okay, so I imagine the world. I just came up with this thought the other day while I was driving. And I imagine that all of our bodies are forklifts. And we're all new people who are okay, now you have to drive this machine. And you can cause a lot of damage with it. And that's our little brains that are put in our heads. And so we're all just training. And we make mistakes. And this came up yesterday. I met with my biological father to do fun stuff. We were doing dirt bike stuff. It was cool. And he talked said in our conversation, we spent 2 hours talking in the morning, which was really good. And I enjoyed it. And that's something that was different from the last time where talking with him was very difficult. And I'm just man, you're really full of yourself. And I'm please stop doing all the things that I hate about myself. That's pretty much stop being my dad, but that's not going to happen. I was thinking of all the times where I was given a second chance, and I'm I want to give you a second chance to get to know me. Nothing else, but just I want to get to know each other. And yesterday he addressed that in the meeting where he's thank you for giving me my second chance to be able to start at the very beginning, which was not necessarily me feeling bad, but I'm his kid, and I'm I know what it's like for you to say that you're wrong, and I'm I got that, because I'm always right. Even when I'm wrong, I'm right. It's so I felt that kind of shared heaps of coal, and I'm good job, love you too.
Thank you, Stephen. That was worth my time. I give you credit for that. Thank you. Good. Let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word again. We thank you for the truth that we find there that sometimes requires a little bit of chewing to stop. And Lord, I pray that